But here, on the very rim of known space, justice is a long way away.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to the Space Game Junkie Podcast. I, as always, am your co-host, Brian, and joining me, as always, is your co-host, Spaz.
Hello.
Your co-host, Julie.
Hello from the great green north, where the hot peppers grow tall.
That should be Illinois' new slogan. Your co-host, Thorsten.
The old ones. Tonight.
Yeah, hopefully your internet connection. Folks, Thorsten's internet tower got hit with lightning. So we're happy that Thorsten's with us at all. So
I don't know what elder god you annoyed, Thorsten, but please stop.
Also your co-host, you just heard him, Jacob.
That is not dead, which can eternal lie.
And your co-host,
yeah, theme going on this week.
And your co-host, David.
Gun, gun, gun. Items ready to claim, operator.
Friends,
splendid.
Friends, we have a guest this week joining us for the first time in almost 5 years. It's been that long. Like 2019, y'all. Like, can you believe 2019 was 5 years ago? It was 5 years ago. But
oh boy.
I know. But joining us from Wisconsin is Kevin Brock, the lead developer of Pasta Space Interactive, to talk about his recently released to Steam, I'm going to call it a love letter to Freelancer, because that's, I mean, a lot of it is, Underspace, which you can finally buy in early access. On after years of demos, you can finally buy it on Steam and GOG. And you should, because it's terrific, especially if you like Freelancer. It is, it has a lot of love for Freelancer and its DNA, but it also is its own thing. Welcome, Kevin. Welcome back, I guess.
Good to be back.
Now, you heard me describe the game. Would you say I'm on point, or did you have anything to add? Like, what's your elevator pitch for this game?
I always said, well, elevator pitch wouldn't use Freelancer at all for legal reasons, but it is definitely, the goal was always to take Freelancer and build upon it in ways that can't be done ever with mods or anything. Basically, take my problem always with Freelancer is that solid game, solid mechanics, just lacking in content. And obviously, there could be a few more quality of life features like manual docking and all that. So this was always meant to be Freelancer 2.0, so to speak. It is a successor, and I've hope we've nailed it. I mean, people are already trying to mod a total conversion of Freelancer into it, so I think we've done it.
Wait, what? Wait, hang on a second. Stop. People are trying to mod Freelancer into Underspace?
Yeah, sure, there's always been while back, I was taunted by them asking, hey, they had questions about like file formats and how the game's internal systems work.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so people are already working on stuff there.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's astounding.
The things modders do.
I love them. Love them to death.
So Freelancer 2.0, Freelancer 2.0 by way of Lovecraft, by way of Monty Python.
It's not really Monty Python. So the biggest inspiration setting-wise was actually Farscape.
Fair.
Yeah, so Farscape, and if anyone's complaining, it's like, oh, you know, Leviathans and stuff and big space monsters don't belong in sci-fi. May I remind you that I lost track of how many episodes of Farscape had them being, like, eaten by a space monster or, like, going to, like, a station that's mining out a space monster or something similar. There was a lot of organic stuff in Farscape.
Have people actually said that to you, that, like, big space monsters don't belong in science fiction? Have people said that to you?
Their reaction to something that's not supposed to belong in space is, oh, that shouldn't belong in space, so I just doubled down.
Who the hell are they? Have they been there? How the hell do they know?
I don't know.
Have they seen this for themselves? We've all seen Star Wars and Star Trek. I mean, sure, but I mean, they had organics in those too, you know?
Yeah. Have you ever seen the parody of the thing where it's like, it's a next generation, like, it's like a 2 minute long video where it's, they're like cutting over from like the womb of a space whale,
the Riker.
And the baby, and it has Riker's face on it.
Yeah, yeah, just, yeah. Like, yeah. Just,
Exactly. But that original thing was obviously a real episode. There's all the crystalline entities and stuff.
Yeah, and the Ahsoka just had the space whales, but they were all, those were also in Rebels.
If anything, I would strongly argue that the Underspace does not have enough space whales.
Yeah, they actually, that is specifically a thing, is they were wiped out.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you'll be able to find the remains of a billion-year-old space whaling ship that's already in the game.
Oh, wow.
If anyone's made it to Elephon, that's one of the points of interest there. I can get you some good stuff. And once we actually go into release, like, the EVA stuff, the spacewalking stuff, you'll actually be able to go inside that whaling ship and meet the last space whale, which is, it's kind of had a hard life right now.
Hang on a second.
Well, you don't say, it's been stuck in a ship for a billion years.
Mm-hmm. Hang on a second. There's going to be EVA stuff?
Yes.
Once we do the roadmap, one of the big updates is EVA stuff, is getting out of your ship.
Oh, I missed that.
You'll be able to, like, shave stuff off bigger ships and stuff. It kind of plays, the comparison I always make with the EVA stuff is going to be Subnautica. Subnautica is like stuff where you're in, you get out of your sea moth or whatever, you're going around, you'll see, like, you know, what it'll have now is it'll spawn random wrecks, and then pre-existing wrecks will also have interiors you can go inside. And that'll be like you use, like, different utility tools to, like, collect resources. You can find wrecked spaceships and repair them and tow them back to stations and fix them up. And you can get, like, some unique ships that way. There's a lot of stuff coming with EVA, and I'm really excited for that.
Wow. But I must fancy. Have missed that. I must have missed
that. That's neat.
Yeah, that's one of our roadmap plans, as it were.
I will admit, though, Brian, this game is second only to Spaceborne 2 in terms of scope and insanity. I don't think the developers tried to add, like, two RTS modes, so I think it's still, like, reasonably below that, but not that far below.
Yeah, this is...
You have ideas now, huh?
We have specific stuff we're doing for post-release content. There's not... And there's always this dude wouldn't be cool aspect to it, but it's like... We've got a plan, and we're sticking to it right now.
Yeah, well, that's you good. Do not Sounds want great. To end. You do not want to. And speaking of freelancer, you do not want to Chris Roberts this.
No,
that was the goal always going in. No Chris Roberts.
Oh God, did I ever tell you I saw Freelancer in 1999? And the version I saw was very different. I actually got to go visit Microsoft. And the version I saw was very different than what we actually got. It was much bigger, more expansive. But eventually people had to start saying no to Chris Roberts.
And that's where it all falls apart.
And
back in the day, we all thought people were being excessive and not overly harsh on Chris Roberts. We did not know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's critical information.
I mean, the Freelancer we got was great. I've played it to death. I love Freelancer, you know, but it's kind of weird that there weren't a lot of other Freelancer alikes. You know, I mean, it did come out a little late when space games were kind of in the dumps.
Yeah, we had... Again, Dark Star 1, we had maybe I Want To?
No, I wouldn't call that a Freelancer-like. Dark Star 1 was definitely a Freelancer-like. Definitely. But
yeah, they advertised it as that. I remember they were on, like, the Freelancer fan sites advertising it as such.
Oh, and
I actually played it. It's okay.
And a tangent, that's coming to Switch. Dark Star 1, they just announced it today. It's coming to Switch. Yeah.
Who owns it?
Calypso at this point apparently owns it. So yeah, they're making a Switch version, which is good because there aren't a lot of grand space adventures on the Switch. There's Rebel Galaxy Outlaw and
Everspace, isn't that on?
Huh?
No Man's Sky.
Oh yeah, No Man's Sky. Oh yeah.
I think Everspace was on.
I think maybe the first Everspace.
No Man's Sky.
Maybe the first Everspace is on Switch. I had forgotten about that. You have No Man's Sky. Good point. Good point. That's also on Switch. But there aren't a lot. That's what, three, four? There aren't many. So one more is great. But yeah, when it's great to see so much love for Freelancer in this thing, because Freelancer did a lot right. I mean, it knew that people were getting rid of their joysticks, and they didn't have joysticks anymore. They didn't want joysticks anymore. So it lets you play effectively with a mouse. And I gotta say, Freelancer had a very, like, specific control scheme where it's following the mouse, right? Like, the nose of the ship is following the mouse cursor. It's like being dragged around by it. That's what it feels like. and if I'm correct, and you have nailed that, sir, 100%.
I can't take credit for that. Another, if you know Y485, who I think is here in the Discord, he's also got a tiny combat arena. Yes, yeah, he was actually instrumental in getting that working. We actually, I know that there's this one guy who follows me around saying, "Oh, you stole his code and stuff." It's like, we're friends, dude. He's one of the backers on the thing. We talked a lot about actually how to emulate Freelancer mechanics.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about Freelancer is your ship is actually just an NPC, and all it does with the mouse commands is actually gives it a point to fly to that it's figuring out. Yeah. Because one of the original plans for Freelancer when it was first made is that you didn't actually really control your ship. You just gave it commands to do that it would figure out. Oh, so obviously they refined that into a... like a system where it's actually flying by mouse and such. So we don't quite do that, but it does emulate it very similarly.
Yeah, it feels spot on. It feels great. It feels like
it's brilliant.
It feels like I'm playing Freelancer in a very different mod, because this universe is very different from Freelancer.
Oh, it's very, very different.
Which is great. Which is great. So, folks, if you don't know, basically you chase, one of your big things in this game is chasing storms. And I'd love to know where the idea for that came from. Yeah, space storms. Which you don't, like, you see that a little bit in some games, like Freelance, like Descent Free Space 2 had the Nebula, and some other games have things like that, but not to this extent. So where did the idea for space storms come from? Because no other game that I can think of really... like, a lot of space games don't even deal with any kind of terrain at all, you know? But here you have, you know, not space storms, which really give you a sense of space terrain. So where did that idea come from?
It was actually almost like a last-minute thing when this game first began development. I originally worked for Human Head. I was a programmer on The Quiet Man, and if anyone's ever played that game, I apologize. You know of it. I'm sorry, I was pitching to Human Head, and Human Head is like, this needs a gimmick. And so there's always this aspect of there being like random jump holes and the universe being kind of unusual. And I was like, well, what if I expand like the random jump hole system a little bit larger and actually make that like a dynamic weather system? Because I always like dynamic weather systems. I played around with it with a few other games. So that became the thing where it's like, well, what if I, because the other part of it under Space's DNA was this canceled Elder Scrolls space thing. It's, if anyone knows Tattered to Malin, it wasn't Tattered to Malin. It was my own project that fell through, never really got off the ground.
Elder Scrolls?
Yeah, Elder Scrolls has space aspects.
Right, it does.
It kind of,
a ton of space aspects.
Yeah.
No. There's space travel. They had space travel in that, right, in the lore.
That was a thing. There's also time-traveling cyborgs and all sorts of other insanity. Continuing.
Yeah. I'm big into Elder Scrolls esoteric technology lore and stuff. It's what I'm originally known
for. That explains a lot about this game. That explains a lot. Yeah.
So there's a lot of cut elements from that Elder Scrolls space thing that were taken and put into Underspace. And the space storms were basically trying to take an aspect of like a sort of like a world dynamism, I guess you would say. And it had kind of expanded out from there. And the setting kind of shifted to being about those space storms. So a lot of aspects of the game really morphed over like just a space of like a month into what the setting is now. It really was just a stir of the moment thing to get a gimmick to pitch to the studio, but it's what it turned into.
Hey, I like it.
I love it. I think it's brilliant. Oh, yeah. I one of my favorite things about the storm chasing thing is if you don't claim a storm, you'll find other storm chasers out there along with you. That'll show up and try and deal with the storm.
Correct.
I just love that.
Yeah, we have a whole system where it's like there's other star chasers. I don't like it in games where you're like a guy or the guy. Like you're the it's like the Tenno in Warframe. It's like you are the Tenno, but the Tenno is like a cast, but you never really see like any other NPC Tenno and stuff. The only one you meet, I think, is like Rel, the Harrow's Tenno, and that's it. And it's sort of like, I would like to meet other characters. And I get that, like, we're the player character, and that's unique. But I like it when if a player character is a class of something, then other people in the universe, other characters, are also that class of thing. And that was the problem. So that's where all the other star chases come from. There's 30 random star chases, and there's obviously tons of other characters.
Right. And I just love how they show up. But you bring up an interesting point, how you're not just the guy, because that seems to pop up in other ways. Like in Freelancer, for example, when you got jumped in a trade lane, everyone just shot you. Like, all the bad guys would shoot at you. You were like their only target. Even if the police showed up, you were their only target. But not in Underspace. I've gotten jumped a few times and the cops show up, and it turns into a fracas where everyone's shooting everybody else. So that's
alternatively they
which makes sense. Which makes sense.
Yeah, their targeting priority is random in Underspace. In Freelancer, I think there's like a weight to have them prioritize you. It's either that or it's like squad mates will prioritize the squad leader's target. And I thought that was cool, but that's something we'll probably add to the AI later on where it's appropriate.
Now, I wanted to ask about a thing I accidentally discovered while I was recording the video that we're using for the background. It's called a friend drive, I think it's called.
Yep. Yeah, so that's if you recover party members through various side quests or just meeting them out in space. I'm actually working on some improvements to that right now. You can summon them in, and that's a temporary squad mate that grants you bonuses.
Oh.
It matches your fire. So that's our version of party members. And then afterwards, if you land on a station, you can talk to them. And each one has like a sort of like a Mass Effect 2 style loyalty quest, where if you do that, they get additional bonuses and better ship equipment, and they change their costume.
Though from what I can tell, it's those are soon trademarked. That all.
Are they patenting loyalty quests?
Wait, what? Wait, hang on.
You just said they're trademarking it.
No, as in soon trademark. As in the pattern is the quests aren't in the game yet, unless I bashed my head against it so many times and didn't get it to work, and I'm just unlucky.
Oh, the loyalty quests in Underspace are not quite implemented. They exist, but the actual dialogue for getting them to actually trigger is not in yet.
Okay, so they're not startable yet.
They're not startable, yeah.
Because I rescued a guy from another dimension yesterday.
Yeah, Pyrona, she's got a quest. Her quest isn't in yet. That's going to come with our first big update.
Oh, yeah, that was fun. But then I somehow accidentally hit the button and she just showed up. I'm like, what is this?
Yeah, at the end of the quest, it says she's a squad mate.
Yeah, so there's a lot going on here. There's a lot going on.
Gives
you
free scanning because she has a scout ship.
Yeah, and I that's another thing I love is the scanning thing, where you find little tidbits of things like a gold thing is something you got definitely have to check out. What is a white thing on the scanner? What is a white thing?
It's just a station or a planet. It's not important, but it's like people ask to be able to find station stuff via it. So I was like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, because occasionally you just get like you go through a jump hole, you get spat out like in the middle of nowhere, and you're like, where the hell is everything?
Yep.
I see.
I do also appreciate the option to hail the nearest friendly / neutral target and go, hey, can you like tell me where the nearest station is? And one out of three times I'll just tell you to fuck off. But
yeah, it's weighted based on your reputation with them. So the friendlier they are, the higher chance they have of actually agreeing to your service. I was testing some stuff out with combat, and I hailed like a police ship, and I needed it to fight me, so I just demanded some cargo off it. And I was like, oh, God, no, please take all my money. I was like, no, I want you to try and kill me. I didn't expect it to work.
That's great. Because Freelancer had something of a reputation system, but it never really felt like it mattered, like at all. Mm-hmm. Not really, but your reputation system so far, from what I've seen, seems to really very much matter.
There's a lot more. So the reputation in Freelancer affected what goods you could buy, and it affected if, like, in a fight, they might come to assist you. Here, it affects, like, the services you can use, the goods you can buy, to some extent, like, new quests will get off. Some places will offer you specific quests if you have high reputation. And, of course, if you have really high reputation, each faction will offer you a unique elite mission on the random mission board that gives you a little bit more context to some of the shadier stuff they get up to. For example, I think it's like with the Volgan military, normally it's just like, you know, clear minefields, take out some pirates, but this one you're like kind of doing something that's vaguely espionage related. It seems just a little shady and a little possibly illegal, but they trust you enough to give you the mission.
Oh, that's fun.
It's fun stuff.
That's very fun. So far I've only flown like two or three ships in the game, but I've really enjoyed them. How many ships are available for the player?
So we have... Let's see. I'm just pulling it up. T-ship record. We got the editor open right now, so I'm just pulling that up. So we currently have... Come on, don't malfunction on me. Did I say something? Oh, it's got to recompile. Hold on. I think it's like around, in terms of just like straight ships, in terms of like, this is a ship you can buy. There are approximately 124.
Holy moly. That's more than Freelancer, nice. If I recall correctly.
Yeah, but there were
like 70.
In Freelancer, of course, each ship had like its own unique model for each, like every single ship had its own unique model, basically. Here, it's not the case. It's ships are divided into different lines. So all Valdwin fighters are going to look the same. That was an intentional choice. I thought about like, oh, gradually the ships will get built up. And maybe further down the line, like ship tiers will gain more complex models as they go up in tier. But I didn't want it to be like, I like this style of fighter, but it's a heavy fighter and I don't use heavy fighters, so I'm not going to fly this. I didn't want that to be tied to aesthetic, to be decided to stat decision, basically.
Fair enough.
I want it to be like the ship line matches ship aesthetic, basically.
I also guess that people can always mod in different models.
Oh, yeah, yeah. People are like, oh, I don't like the ship models. Like, sooner or later, everything will be based off moddable, so if you don't like something, just change it. You're the god of your own unhappiness.
Incredible.
And that's going to give this game lots of legs, just like Freelancer. Because
exactly.
Folks, if you're listening to this, I don't know how you don't know this, but people are still playing Freelancer today. Like, there are a lot of mods out there for it, and people are still playing it regularly, which astounds me. It is 21 years old this year? Oh, my God. No, wait. 21 years old this year.
21?
Oh my God.
Please don't.
I'm sorry. It came out in 2003.
Everyone's old.
I remember driving to the Electronics Boutique to pick up my pre-ordered copy. At a nearby mall.
Electronics boutique.
Yeah.
Old.
Freelancer can legally drink now.
I can.
Oh my God, that's true. So were the storms, because I want to get back to that because they're so fascinating to me. Were they hard to implement? Because there's such this big dynamic thing. With like multiple phases to it. You got to take out the defenses and you got to take out the thing, the rift.
Storm system was actually one of the first things we made. So early on, it was actually pretty easy to make, but it got a bunch of refactors because there was a lot of elements when it first started that I just did not like. The biggest one used to be that storms were actually physical objects that were actually blowing across the galaxy.
Oh, that sounds complicated.
It wasn't complicated, but the biggest issue with it was that because they blew across the galaxy physically, and they'd always start from the outer rim and then, you know, move inwards, basically, or move in a certain direction, it always meant that basically only a few systems would actually end up having storms, because they would always hit the same areas, because so only, like, the outer rim systems would be hit by storms. And that didn't fit the design of what I wanted this to be. I wanted the storms to be much more random, much more chaotic.
And be everywhere.
The entire point is the storms are all basically anywhere that's got like faster than light travel happening, it's going to have storms. So I was playing again Warframe, and I remember I was looking at like how the Lich nodes work, of course. It's like the Lich basically takes over a planet and spreads to random nodes. I'm like, well, our star systems are basically just nodes. It's like, so what if I just had that spreading system there? So, and that was the kind of impetus to refactor a lot of stuff, change how the storm spread works. But the basic concept of you enter the storm, there's the effects, there's the rift at the center, and then there's the sometimes a boss guarding it, usually a hazard. That's been in for quite a while. That was one of the first things ever made. And it's a pretty robust system. It's not particularly all that complex.
That's good.
Like I said, the storm is like a physical object in the game, and it has like the list of the systems that it's currently inhabiting. And then the storm itself has like a list of like what possible hazards it has, waits for you to enter the thing, and then it spawns the hazard, links it to the generator, and from there it's just, you know, you gotta take it out.
I had a storm kick my butt yesterday because it seemed to be surrounded by these seeking mines that just...
Serpentine, man, serpentine. I'm surprised people get killed by the train so much. It's like, just stop. Just don't go up to the... have you not heard of Operation Lifesaver?
Wait, what's Operation... What's that?
It's an ongoing thing by the Federal Railway Association to teach people to be safe around trains, which is to say, if you see a level crossing and you hear a train coming, stop.
Oh no.
It's existed for like 40 years and it's failed utterly.
Well, apparently it has. People keep getting run over by trains in other space. Myself included, I still very distinctly remember. I was just, you know, the funny part is it was a category one storm. So, you know, supposed to be a cakewalk. Casually flying towards it, I see a random like beam of light go across the screen. I presume it's a giant laser, so I avoid the giant laser. And suddenly I get hit by a train.
Yeah. It made train noises, didn't it?
No, not really.
Really?
Maybe not that easy loud.
I could swear I set that thing to make train noises.
Might want to check the audio balance on that one.
I do love that this game has a fast travel system that involves galactic trains.
You charter a train.
This is utterly terrific.
This is the place for a tangent, and I got to ask.
Okay.
You are also the train whiz that once claimed in an interview Mattel wanted you dead because you modded Thomas the Tank Engine into Skyrim as dragons. And I'm sure, if not, make up a story about it because I want to hear about it.
No, they want me dead because I modded Skyrim with Thomas the Tank Engine. They sent me so many legal threats when I did it in Fallout 4, and they didn't do for Starfield, which is, I guess kind of tells you everything about that, which is they didn't send me legal threats when I did it for Starfield.
Tells you how much people get.
Wait, you modded Thomas the Tank Engine into...
As the dragons, yeah.
Yeah, as the dragons in Skyrim, so that was my big claim to fame, of course. Right, and then I did it again for Fallout 4 with a bunch of things, and they sent some lawyers from Macedonia after me.
From Macedonia?
Yeah, from Macedonia. I was like, you've got a legal threat from, like, Macedonia. You made Thomas the Tank Engine explode, and that diminishes his brand. That was the funny thing to me is the Fallout 4 video, he replaced death claws and stuff, so he's, like, ripping people apart, killing people and stuff. But he blew up at one point, and that was the problem. Not that he was a murderous psychopath, no, that he could die. They don't want children to know that Thomas can be defeated.
I read that YouTube had done a takedown on you, and then somebody said, hey, parody, and they said, okay, parody, and put it back up.
Hang on. Why North Macedonia?
I don't know. Maybe this is where they thought they could get away with it because parody law would just tell them to take a hike in the U.S. I don't know.
Huh.
It's regardless.
Yeah, I do not know.
So is Thomas in this game as like an Easter egg or anything? Is Thomas the Tank?
No.
Okay.
We got a lot of trains, but I wasn't going to risk that. I've already played with fire too much.
Admittedly, shoving straight up Thomas the Tank Engine into a commercial product, that might be a problem.
Yeah.
That would lead to a takedown.
That could not be
Well, somebody recently asked me when I mentioned this, and they said, why? I said, because it's funny. That's all. You know, I can just, you know. So anyway, I also wanted to know why Pasta Space. It's an unusual name. There's got to be a story behind that.
That's what you. That's the space you can reach if you have a noodle drive.
Oh, gee.
Okay. Asked and answered.
Asked and answered. The question also, I really wanted to know about your artwork. Do you do your own artwork? I really like the artwork.
So a lot of the stuff, like Spaceside Stations especially, that was me. We have an asset team primarily for organic assets. So stuff like the snakes, the creatures and stuff, that was an art team, but
they've
stations,
done a job.
Like the space dungeons and stuff, those were me.
Yeah, oh, yeah, the space dungeons, forgot to mention. Well,
wait,
a lot of people don't know about this.
I haven't seen these yet.
Dungeons.
I haven't seen these yet. Yeah,
they're pretty rare. I think we've got about 7 or so space dungeons hidden across the game. Usually there's something you have to unlock with via like ancient gates or something, but we have big space dungeons which you explore with your spaceship. It kind of turns the game into a descent, but not quite.
Which is a good thing. Just to clarify, that is good.
Oh wow, that's God, there's a little bit of everything in this thing, isn't there?
Yeah, this is what I found is like all the reviews. It's like all the negative reviews have like half, like 5 minutes into the game. It's like if you put the time into the game, it will reward you. There is so much scope and content and just stuff here and mechanics and everything. Access. Yeah, we still got more stuff coming.
Like I have played the game, like I've played the campaign to completion. I'm still going. I'm still finding new stuff. 31 hours in.
Wait, you finished the campaign?
Yeah. The campaign is perfectly playable to the from beginning to end. It's missing voice work, and a couple of stations are placeholders because stuff.
The axle is a placeholder, I think, and that's
The axle is a placeholder, and I think like two other capitals, but those you don't technically visit during the campaign, or at least you don't have to.
Exactly.
Sorry, go ahead.
Carry on.
No, go.
I was going to say that the game is primarily missing the voice acting work, which that's just a me thing. Mostly because there's like there was no other indication of people speaking, so I often ended up missing dialogue because, for example, your character speaking appears in the middle of the screen and the radio is in the top right corner, so I look at the top right corner waiting for the character to spin. To finish speaking, suddenly they say something completely unrelated, and I realize that the character said something in the middle of the screen where I wasn't looking.
Yeah, we need to get voice acting in at some point. I've got a few voice actors lined up, but not all of them.
Well, I appreciate that you're going to try not to use AI. I just want to say that. I appreciate that.
Full disclosure, my brother is one of the top researchers at DeepMind for Google. A lot of this technology was literally invented by him.
Oh.
that's not like my uncle works at Nintendo thing. That's straight up. You can look at my Twitter, look who I'm following, and you can figure out, you can draw your own conclusions based on the names.
Yeah.
So the thing about AI is, the ironic part is like all that janky, like the constructed space chatter, it's not good at that. It's funny. It's like you'd think that would be the one thing it's good at, as randomly generating those text things. But for whatever reason, like the cadence of how people spoke for that, AI can't do that. And it's like AI can't ham it up. AI, there's a lot of limitations with AI. So it's like I wouldn't use it because it can't ham it. This is a hammy space game, and I need ham, and that's get ham from...
That's true.
You need an actual voice actor to get that emotion, because AI can't do emotion.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's a lot of AI.
It's been great for the Morrowind modding scene. They've been doing a lot of good stuff with it, but by and large, it's still a tool, and it's not a tool that can do a lot of things that need to be done, honestly.
Oh, we have a question from the chat. Will mods be available through Steam Workshop?
I hope so. We want to have it coming, but
the ball is partially in Steam's court.
We just got cloud saving working because I don't know how half that stuff works.
It works great, by the way. It's relatively easy to set up, thankfully. But it works great. I tested it out on my laptop yesterday, and it worked absolutely fine.
Yeah, we do have it working now. So Steam cloud saving works, which also probably means that GeForce Now works. And then, like I said, we're going to get Workshop support working. Basically, once I start getting more modding guides out, and that requires a wiki that isn't hosted by Fandom, which we're working on. I think the guys that host all the Dark Souls and Elden Ring stuff agreed to host a wiki for us.
Extra Life?
not Fextra. What is it? Mirahees. I don't know what.
Is there a problem with fandom? I don't know.
Much. Oh, fandom. There is a lot of. There's a lot of problems with fandom.
Oh, because that's where Memory Alpha is, and I go there pretty regularly.
Yeah, it's.
I didn't know there was a problem.
Yeah, there's. You could look it up. There's a lot of issues with fandom, just how they operate and stuff, and they're just.
That's.
Can
that's
I ask you? I mean, usually when I look at these things, and there's this long history of, you know, I work on this and this and this, and there obviously from listening to your conversation here, this isn't the first game you've worked on, but it seems like it's the first game that's like your baby and you put out there. If that's the case, you know, what else did you work on? And I'm always curious when you have an indie game developer, you know, what started them down this road? Because, you know, I've got a friend in the game industry. He started out as an ichthyologist, and I was talking to my sister this morning, and I said, who knew Rod would have become an executive producer someplace? Did you just wake up one morning and said, hey, I know video games. I just love video games. Hey, I love trains. What's behind all that? What have you done before?
So, like I said, I work for Human Head. I do contract work for Bethesda Studios right now. And then, like I said, so Human Head was my first real job. And like I said, worked on The Quiet Man. And Human Head had a bunch of layoffs, and I got laid off. So it's like, well, I pitched it to them. I have in writing that I still own the pitch from them. I might as well just try and make it on my own. I thought, I was like, oh, I can make this in, like, you know, 2 to 3 years. And here we are 6 and a half later.
Is, like, that seems to happen a lot where people think a game will only take a year or two and it takes several more. What is there, like, a thing that slows you down more than you think it will? Is it because it's more complex than you envision?
The biggest blocker to get everything working was the content. There's so much content in this game, and it's almost like my biggest mistake was, like, I probably should have had a second person working on this from the start, helping with a lot of more, some of the background stuff. But even then, it would have just taken so long because we had so much plans for content, getting that all written out. And I think that's why a lot of, I think, indie devs go for the roguelike thing, is just content is just always the thing that takes the most time.
Well, you know, for this being your new studio, your first game out, this is really impressive.
Thank you. I've had everything we plan to do after this is going to be huge in scope. I don't like small games.
Well, I appreciate that, because I could see with the missions and the storms and everything, this is a game I could play for a long, long time.
Yeah, and we've got, like I said, we've got more coming. This is just the beginning.
Oh, man.
So I may have a question, if I may.
I hope you do.
Yeah, I never played Freelancer myself here. I just had to Alt-Tavern quickly read here, and then I didn't know it actually had multiplayer, and your game will have multiplayer. What can you tell about that?
Okay, so if you haven't played Freelancer, I'm trying to think of what the closest equivalent might be that's, like, people have played. So, multiplayer works largely the same as the normal game. It's the same world, same mechanics. There's key differences, of course. There's no main campaign, because that's obviously more story-focused. Instead, we have our own multiplayer campaign, which is less of a story thing and more like a series of interrelated activities with a central narrative. So the dichotomy I always kind of use is Grand Theft Auto 5 versus Grand Theft Auto Online, just with way less hackers, hopefully.
Oh, God, yeah.
So that's a similar dichotomy where it's the same game, but with an online component that's not quite an MMO, but sort of like an MMO. All servers are player-hosted, though. So players, we don't have any centralized servers or anything. Players host their own servers. Your account on that server is specific to that server. And then, obviously, you can have mods and all that sort of thing.
Oh, that's cool.
So talking about game modes, I've seen that a second single-player game mode is planned, some kind of a free game mode.
Yeah, so that will come with multiplayer, because multiplayer is, like I said, it's not... hold on a sec. Because multiplayer is not campaign focused, so you don't have a specific character you're playing as. It'll also come with a new free play mode in single player, which is the same thing, in that you'll make an account, you'll follow the same multiplayer campaign, just tweaked for single player, and that will also allow you to create and customize your own character.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so we have... There is character customization in game, but right now it's just limited to Cardoz, and he's not really a guy that likes to dress up because he's just an old dude. But he's an old rich dude. He doesn't care about fashion. But in multiplayer and free play, of course, you'll have all the different playable races to choose from, which have their own stats and skills, and then you'll have all the different customization options there.
And then you'll just do the missions and follow the storms and that sort of thing.
Exactly.
So then I need to immediately ask her, Kevin, since you seem to have played Warframe, is he something a little bit of Cephalon Psy, you would say?
What?
He's talking about the Cephalon that presides over your Railjack, which are the space missions. I like Railjack, except when it's not Railjack and you have to go off of the Railjack and not do Railjack things. That's when I don't like Railjack.
Okay, what's Railjack?
In Warframe, Railjack, you've got a lot of different game modes in Warframe, but Railjack is basically their space fire component. So it's like and four guys.
Yeah, they built a co-op spaceship thing, and then they forgot about it because it's Warframe.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So it's, as far as an actual game mode goes, I really like it because it integrates well with the normal game. So it's like you're on your spaceship and stuff, and it maneuvers pretty similar to a fighter. You know, you're shooting other fighters and stuff, and then you have other players on different stations and stuff. Like they can be gunners or they can be engineers putting out fires and stuff, and you can actually get out of the spaceship. And there's like a I don't know what you'd even call an archwing. It's kind of like a flight mode for your Warframe. And you can like board other ships and blow them up. You can board other stations and you'll have like little mission objectives on that station and stuff. So it's really fun. It's almost similar to how like the original Battlefront 2 handled space battles.
Oh.
But it's kind of neglected. So it's called Railjack because the ship you're flying is called a Railjack.
Oh yeah,
there's a lot of elements to it, but it's just like it's weirdly undercooked and yet also not weirdly undercooked.
Oh, that's
because it's kind of focused around a four player. Yeah, it's very similar to Jump Ship, or which used to be called Hyperspace. It's very similar to Jump Space, is what Jump Space actually wants, which is the you and four people on the spaceship going around and then getting out of the spaceship temporarily to do side activities. While someone can stay aboard the spaceship and also provide support and stuff.
Do you mean like the Jump to Hyperspace expansion for Star Wars Galaxies?
Possibly. I never played that.
Partially, but also I feel like we... Why did you bring this one up, David?
I was thinking of Cardoz is reminded of... Cephalon Psy, and the Cephalon responsible for the Railjack. I'm sorry for slight tangent, sorry.
No, it's right.
They've got similar grumpy, personalities,
weird,
yeah.
Grumpy, weird old guy.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Which is Void Crew unique, would be similar.
Which is a unique character archetype for space games. Grumpy, weird old guy.
Yeah, yeah. You don't get to play the grumpy, weird old guy very often. Usually much younger.
I wanted him to be grumpy and old. But he's still got miles to go.
Just like all of us gamers at this point, we're all grumpy. And
yes.
I threw my back out a few weeks ago putting together an exercise bike. I felt like it was either irony or coincidence, but either way, it hurt.
The funny thing, the first character you meet in the campaign is his lawyer.
Who is also his only friend.
Who is also his only friend. So good. Impeccable characterization. 10 out of 10, no notes.
it kind of tells you everything you need to know about this poor guy.
You know, I started playing the game and it was like, oh my God, I just started and I'm in trouble. What did I do now?
You've lost everything.
Yeah. I don't know how long the Vault will live, but I think Cardoz is about the right time for a midlife crisis. So I guess taking up star chasing...
We have some time frames and stuff. So Vaudwin Live, with all their space medicine and stuff, they live to be about like 120 to 150 years old. So he's supposed to be a little over middle age, is what I imagine.
So yeah, perfectly in time for a midlife crisis involving getting into a weird spaceship and starting the star chase and potentially saving the universe. The whole thing.
Yeah, but not by choice.
Not by choice, you know. Yeah.
So Jacob, you said you finished the campaign. How did you enjoy it?
Yep. I enjoyed it dramatically, though I do believe it can be somewhat ironed out.
Well, I mean, that makes sense. Yeah.
It's entirely fair. The big thing is, while all the missions are fun, it feels like it has some pacing problems.
Okay.
Which is to say, compared to Freelancer, where Freelancer, like, you do a mission, you go on a bunch of side quests, you do a mission, you go on a bunch of side quests, there is a point where you're just shoved into a Wing Commander style campaign with back-to-back missions. Oh, okay. Where you like get paid tons of money for big military encounters. And at that point, it feels a bit like the game feels like it strongly encourages you not to go out and explore and do stuff, because it straight up just goes, all right, welcome back aboard, next mission, go. So that's the only thing I kind of disliked about it, purely because it doesn't necessarily play to the game's strengths. Which is,
yeah, it was kind of hard to fit the wartime experience in with the go anywhere thing. We kind of based that around, like, we felt like players were just instantly going to go to one mission after another, and that's kind of that whole section basically it went through a heavy rewrite, because there was a lot of concepts that had to get introduced, and the original storyline basically was like it either glossed over it or it was too much. So we had to space it out into a bunch of different campaign missions. And so it turns into like a whole war storyline that kind of breaks the flow a bit. But at the same time, people have kind of been begging for like a more mission-based space game. So I'm like, hey, we're kind of unintentional.
I did like it, but it did feel like you have this perfectly fine Freelancer game and then you just slap on a wing, like a chapter of Wing Commander in the middle.
But then you go, but I'm guessing once that's done, you can go back to the open world stuff.
Yeah, so we describe the campaign as sort of like a cone, basically. So as you start out, it's big and open. As you start playing it more and more, it shrinks the amount of stuff you can do until you beat the campaign, and then it opens back up again.
Yes.
There's the one thing we need to add is a few basically stuff staying. This is kind of like a point of no return, basically. Because at some point in the main campaign, it's not just back-to-back missions where you do not have a choice. You have to, similar to Freelancer, I think like after you like dock with the Osiris in Freelancer.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
after it's just back-to-back campaign missions. It's kind of the end game.
Yeah.
So we have the end game here, which is basically once you reach a certain point in the campaign, it's just back-to-back. You don't even get a chance to explore. Yeah,
that is the only issue I really had with the campaign. It's the fact that there is just this segment in the middle that goes, "Hello, you're playing Wing Commander now." That's fine, but that's not what I paid $20 for.
Oh,
but,
thank you. So I guess if you like give the player like, oh, this is the point of no return for the campaign. Do you want to keep going or do you want to not keep going right now? Like maybe give.
Yeah, it's a warring basis. Like you feel like after this thing, it's going to be like a point of no return for you.
That's fair.
Right.
Because I specifically did that thinking, oh, I'll just be able to like explore whatever it is. And then it goes, no, you get back on the ship, you have things to murder.
Yeah, stuff starts happening.
Stuff does start happening really quickly.
Like, that's fine.
The game technically doesn't force you, if you want to be really technical about it. Like, you could theoretically just leave the ship between missions, but the game recommends you shouldn't, and the pacing of the story recommends you shouldn't.
Yeah.
Like you have to actively like the guy in charge actively tells you get your ass back to the briefing room, and you have to actively not listen to him to go out and explore.
Yeah, it's sort of an Elder Scrolls issue where it's like how do you create urgency but also maintain freedom.
Yes. Now I will concede you have done much better in terms of actually creating urgency than the vast majority of open world games. It just a weird sort of urgency that just sort of appears in the middle of the campaign.
Yeah, it's one of the things we kind of wanted to do is you know, we're building up in the first act, basically, things, and it suddenly everything shifts, and we wanted that kind of jarring feeling of the ship is suddenly like, because remember, of course, in the Wing Commander section, you are sort of like, why am I here? And of course, and there's obviously a reason for that, as we find out. But there's meant to be a little bit of confusion when you enter Act Two, and you're suddenly like among all the bigwigs and stuff, even though you're by that campaign's time basically a nobody.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I like it. I'm gonna have to be careful because I don't want to burn out on early access releases. You know what I mean? So like I play
most of the campaigns in a final state. There's, like I said, there's that. Of course, there's all the voice acting. The voice acting is the big thing missing.
Right. So how long do you see yourself in early access before finally release?
We're playing for about a year in early access.
Okay.
And then final release. Might be a little bit longer. The biggest thing, of course, the biggest blocker, of course, is the multiplayer.
Right.
But like I said, about a year seems well enough to basically get all the things out. And then, of course, we have a few post-release updates planned.
Yeah, it seems very reasonable, a year. You know, I mean, you've already been working on it so long, one final year for this last push. Because, I mean, the base game, I mean, there's some bugs still. But, I mean, the base game is really solid already, you know.
Yeah, it's mostly adding a few quality of life features here and there. And then polishing up the bugs and then adding the remaining content. And, of course, multiplayer.
Yeah, the biggest bug I keep running into is that storms disappear when you reload a save game. That's the biggest bug.
That should no longer occur now. Like I said, the reason that was, I'm trying to remember why that was happening. It was a stupid reason that was happening.
Oh, it happened yesterday as I was playing.
It definitely shouldn't happen anymore. I was, send me that save and I'll test it out. But maintains storm integrity between saves now, at least in theory.
99 little bugs in the code. 99 little bugs.
I'm sorry.
Take one I'm down. Sorry. Patch it around. I'll 157 little bugs in the code.
I'll see if I can find it. I know you posted where it is, but I'll have to find it. But I will definitely send you that save game.
Yeah.
Once I find it, wherever the hell it is. I think I remember. But yeah, like, because this is such a big open game with so many moving parts, I'm not surprised there were bugs upon early access.
The main thing we're trying to look for is soft locks and crashes is the main thing we're hoping not to find. And so far, it's been pretty crash-free, which is impressive, given it's largely a one-man team. But
yeah,
I've had no crashes, unless you count crashing into planets. I've had one thing I'd consider a soft lock.
You probably might see a few soft locks. That usually
technically two.
One or two soft locks. There's going to be soft locks because a lot of quests and missions, of course, are always untested. But the crashes and stuff, I've seen like crashes on Steam Deck and people report that. I'm like, we're not Steam Deck verified. Of course, we're going to have crashes on Steam Deck. We don't officially support that.
What are you doing?
They're trying to see if it runs on Steam Deck. It's the same thing with like controller support. We do have rudimentary controller support, but by and large,
it has a giant asterisk on it, and it's
it has a giant asterisk, and the biggest asterisk that will never go away is like, I don't know if it's going to be fun with controller, just because it's so much is based around precision shooting, and it's like, without some really heavy auto aim implemented with controllers, I don't think it's going to be really particularly any fun.
You need like auto aim or like gimbaled weapons, like in Elite.
Exactly.
You could make that work, but also should you? It's a whole thing.
Yeah, it's like that's the biggest blocker there. It isn't so much getting controller support working. It's like, how do you make controller support not feel terrible? And it's like, if these people want to use their joystick on this so bad, that's their poor decision. Like I say, you're the god of your own unhappiness.
Oh, I found the save games. I'm going to send you the latest one right now.
Yeah, let me see. Maybe it's something just going wrong.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. real-time bug fixing, my friends.
This is how it is. It'll never end.
Oh, it will end at some point. You'll either say, I'm done, or you'll find all the bugs. I mean,
find all the bugs.
The game I help with, Starfleet 2, is 30 some years old, and he's still finding bugs. You know, we're still finding bugs. Right. You know, I mean, I don't know if we're going to get to a point where there's no bugs left, but we want to get to a point where there's so few, you know, they can move on. But yeah. So how's the early access launch gone for you? Are you happy with it? For the most part?
We basically met our expectations. So basically what we expected for sales, we've got all there.
Oh, good.
We're still getting, like I said, some bigger press coverage here and there. So it'll just keep going up and up in terms of review count. Of course, as we do big updates, people will start coming in. The big one, I think, will be once multiplayer comes in, we'll see a huge uptick in people. Because right now 100%. It's basically just, it's an Elder Scrolls game, and it's going to become more like an Elder Scrolls with online component, which is something that doesn't really happen.
Unless you count Elder Scrolls Online, which I
think it's an Elder Scrolls MMO, but it's like versus an Elder Scrolls with online capability, like the Morrowind multiplayer mod.
Does that work?
Oh, yeah, it works great. We played through the entire main quest modded with it, me and my brother.
What?
Yeah, I helped test a lot of that stuff. We had some funny stuff occur during testing and stuff where like it would like duplicate artifacts and things. I have a screenshot of like me and the main dev, and we both have two hopes fires.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, no, it works. It works great.
Oh, well, that's encouraging. That's actually good to hear.
Yeah, a lot of our multiplayer code conceptually came from a lot of stuff they're doing because it's a similar style of game.
That's true. That's true. You can definitely see a lot of Elder Scrolls DNA in this, which is a good thing. Which is a good thing. I mean, everyone loves Elder Scrolls. Well, you should. Yes,
I am surprised that there is no space station with a giant rock floating above it, about to crash into it. But
not yet.
Not yet. Got it. Right. Just making sure.
If we ever get to the Vale, there should be like a station that orbits an active black hole.
Ooh.
Of course.
Ah, great. Ooh.
Not to be confused with the other space station outside of a black hole.
Oh, and I wanted to thank you for adding probably maybe one of the most important things to the game to me, manual docking.
That was so fucking great.
Excuse my language, because for friends, if you haven't played Freelancer, every time you dock in Freelancer, it the game docks for you, basically. And most of the time it's fine, but there are some times where you're like, God damn it, just get in there already. Especially since the
autopilot has insistence on being supremely English and waiting in queue. And when the wait is for some extremely slow freighter moving towards the docking ring at like 3 meters, at like 2 meters per second, you have to wait like a solid 5 minutes for it to dock. The number of times where I looked, where I tried to dock with the autopilot, saw that it stopped, saw a freighter slowly moving across the street, the screen, like 2 pixels at a time. I just went, saw it, pressed the manual docking, gunned the thrusters, and went in.
Yeah. At this point, it's like, you have to actually turn automatic docking on intentionally. It doesn't save anymore, because it's like, manual docking is just so much more better faster in every way. And it's like, so it's like, if you want to do your automatic docking, fine, but you're gonna basically sign a waiver for that. I've seen like people complain about like automatic docking. It's like, you have to turn that on now. You are the god of your own unhappiness. If you don't like something in this game, chances are it has support for you to overcome that or change it completely.
Okay, I gotta say at this point, not everybody is good at docking in games. I tried to play Elite Dangerous. Granted, when it was first out, I said, where in the F is the opening to this space station?
Julie, it's much simpler. There's a big icon here.
No, trust me. I hated docking in Elite Dangerous. You fly to the point. You just fly into the bay and you're fine.
Yeah, it's a big green thing. It says basically dock here. You just fly up to it. You fly right in. You're done. It's so much more straightforward than Elite Dangerous.
What I did want to ask you about is, because you've done so much modding to other games in your past, is you know, someone like me, when I've done modding, it's like, oh, that's only because Bethesda puts out this really neat tool that lets me do it. And the only time I've ever coded a game is because I knew somebody who coded and said, hey, put this here, not do this here. And is there any kind of like a guide someplace that would help? Like say, hey, if you want to, you know, I know I couldn't put Thomas the Tank Engine in here, but there's things and I want to put Thomas the Tank Engine back in the game where it belongs. Is there some kind of guide that would help out neophytes like myself?
We are working on a guide right now. We have mod support, but it's pretty rudimentary. So the things you can modify right now are new photo mode filters, changes to a lot of the base game constants, and then changes to how AI reacts. And that's, like I said, got to write a guide on there. And I'm still working on mod support in general, because the biggest thing is that I want to create, like you said, I want to create like a tool suite for Unity or something that will let people easily create these mods without having to struggle through so much. Because, God, I've struggled through some bad modding tools in the past, and I don't want that experience. So,
well, also, you know, I haven't encountered this with this game, but I belonged to a little static group. We all played Final Fantasy, and we were in a dungeon last week, and the guy starts shouting at me, you know, right there where the little red square is. And I said, oh, thank you. Thank you so very much. You sure it's not the green square? And I'm red-green colorblind. I haven't had that problem with this, but, you know, or I also had this problem like some games. You know that six-point font there? But I always think about that when I come into games, you know, and I said, well, if I have to mod something into the game, I will.
Yeah, we're trying to work on a few accessibility options. Another one, people with motion sickness couldn't do the quest in the other dimension where it's got the rotating.
I could see basically that. I could see that.
So it's like adding stuff there. It's something we're gradually adding. Yeah. Like I said, stuff changes, and you see how often I do patches and stuff. So,
well, I very distinctly remember like two spots where I went, okay, I'm not motion sick. I'm feeling a bit nauseous. A properly motion sick person would be dead.
Yeah.
Well, I also think about, I like the combat in this game. But I also think of a friend of mine who only has peripheral vision. And he was playing a game that had, like, for people like him, it had like an aim assist. And then one day, they just took it out and he couldn't play the game anymore and he was furious.
Yeah, no, like I said, aim assist is something we are planning on adding just because it's what we need for controller support.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
But it's going to be a whole thing.
Yes. Yeah, especially if you want people on the Steam Deck to be able to play this thing.
Yeah, we've had people say it runs fine on the Steam Deck, but it's also like they have to create a bunch of different basically profile maps for it.
Well, I feel like the spokesperson for 60-year-old plus eyes on the podcast.
I know.
I mean, it's kind of amazing. I just want to do a little tangent. It's kind of amazing how much the Steam Deck has been influential to a lot of ways. Like, so many games are now Steam Deck verified and they work on Linux.
It's got Linux somewhat popular.
Like, Linux now has what, almost 2% of users on Steam, which is more than
something
Max,
like that. I think,
which is more than Max.
I have another question here. I think I have two questions if go we still have time.
We do.
So first of all, you know that I had something 100 plus ships in the game. So here's a quick question about these ships. Do you have something, I don't know how to describe it, but do you allow players to fly, air quotes, bigger ships, capital size ships? No.
This is the question I always get. There's always someone who wants cap ships. If anyone's ever played Freelancer with mods, capital ships with this flight system,
a pain in the ass.
It's horrific.
Horrible.
So I'm not against flying capital ships, but capital ships, if they exist, not only need to have their own flight system, they also basically need to be done right. And getting cap ships right means that they're effectively almost another layer of gameplay. Because right now, if we take all the plans we have flying around on your ship, and then we have EVA, and then we have walking around on stations. So each of that is its own level of gameplay. And considering just we have pretty big cap ships in this game, it's not freelancer ships I could see reasonably getting through an asteroid field. Like, our capital ships could not. So there's the question of, like, how does that fit into the overall gameplay loop with everything else that exists in the game? And it effectively would have to be its own layer, which has its own design considerations, and it would almost be essentially creating a new game unto itself. And because there's all those different caveats, it becomes really, really low on priority. Like, you would probably see station construction, like building your own stations, before you probably see capital ships. Because the only thing I can currently see capital ships being is something, again, going back to Subnautica, something similar to how the Cyclops works in that, where it'd be almost like a mobile base that you park outside a specific area, and then you go off in your space fighter and do things. And that's
or something akin to freighters in No Man's Sky, which
or like exactly freighters like in No Man's Sky, basically more of a mobile base than any sort of like dedicated cap ship gameplay where you'd actually be going into a storm and like getting your ship grabbed by big tentacles and stuff. It's like, I have some ideas there, but it's not something at any time we're basically planning to pursue, just because, frankly, it's a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I have an example there from something I've seen, and that's the trip from X3 to X Rebirth to X4, because in their earlier X games, you were allowed to fly big capital ships, and then it took it away in X Rebirth to focus on a smaller ship that you do stuff with. So then we got back these big ships in X4, and would you know, they're slow. Very slow.
They're not fun. They're just not fun. It's very few games can make flying a big ship like that fun. They have to be very specifically designed to be fun flying a giant ship like that. And that's why you don't have a lot of big space cap ships games. Like Independence War did it right. Star Shatter kind of did it right. Like, that's really it, maybe.
Starport Gemini, Warlords,
sort of. Those are more
kind of.
So
it's more arcadey than Sim.
Rebel Galaxy.
But
Rebel Galaxy.
Rebel Galaxy. Yeah. Nexus is more of a kind of a point and click than actually flying it. You know,
Nexus is more of a sort of
strategy, tactical thing.
More of an RTS. I would love to see more like small scale RTSs like that, but alas, no.
Yeah, so capital ships are tough. Oh, yeah. Luke, goddammit. Yes, Battlecruiser 3000 AD, I guess, which that's a whole other. We love you, Derek. We love you.
Allegedly.
I got to protect yourself.
My follow up question here.
Okay.
If I may.
And then we'll start wrapping up after your question, David.
Copy that. So I see these ship designs they have in the game are a slightly low poly count. How many are they, pretty much? Like this starter ship, the Nebula, was it?
Yeah, they're not high poly count now.
So if a hobbyist like me were to model a ship, how many polygons should I go for?
Between 2 and 10K, honestly. Your biggest concern would always be like a collider optimization, but they're not high poly ship. We've always kind of gone for a lower tier graphical look that was intentional. It was what fit our budget, and it's basically what could work and what could allow us to focus more on what matters, which is content.
I
really like the low poly R style or whatever. How low poly can
it really looks? It really looks like it really looks like something from the era of Freelancer. You know, that kind of early to mid 2000s kind of look to it, like kind of PlayStation 2-y. That's not a bad thing. You know, it probably lets you run.
The art style is great.
Yeah, and it probably lets you run on a wider variety of hardware with the lower poly count. So it's a win-win, really.
Also, if we're talking about visuals, I would like to mention and congratulate on the visual effect in storms. What happens is whenever there's a large object in the background, you can occasionally see its outline when lightning flashes.
So creepy.
And that is my favorite effect in this game.
I agree.
Yeah,
that's
a great effect.
So creepy. Like I thought the nebulas in Free Space 2 were creepy and scary. But they're really,
yeah, they don't have,
But they don't have occasional flashes of tentacles in them.
Yeah, great. It's yeah,
there's nothing
so
in
great.
The nebulas. Here it's actually true. This is a lot of the fears in Underspace were inspired by fears I had as a kid in Freelancer. Like Freelancer, you were afraid of radioactive areas, you were afraid of nebulas and jump holes, of course, but nothing could actually happen. The worst you get is like a pirate attack. Or Underspace, all of that is actually true. Jump holes can collapse, there's horrific things in nebulas. Every fear you had as a child or as a young adult basically comes true in Underspace.
So great.
So every great. Single one, mind you. Trust me. There's some fun stuff you can find in random encounters.
Oh, yeah. Man. Oh, I'm excited. So, yeah, we try to keep these to around an hour or so, so we should probably start wrapping up.
Right. There's so much to talk about.
Well, I will definitely.
Brian?
Yes.
I've got actually one question.
Go for it.
I've looked up onto the Pasta Space homepage, and I've seen you've marked something as coming soon. Can you talk about that?
So, yeah, openly. So Underspace is honestly, I don't say it's quite a warm-up, but we do have a game planned after Underspace, which is called Nanosteam. And Underspace actually originally was created to fund Nanosteam's development. So Nanosteam, I would describe, this is a space fighter game. Nanosteam is more of a traditional, it's a first-person shooter RPG set in a far future Earth where Earth has been tamed, untamed, fucked up, unfucked up by psychic engineers, basically, called Doomsmith. So it's very...
Ooh.
The gameplay I would kind of compare to Prime Hack, if you've ever played Metroid Prime with the mouse support. Because that's something I really liked. But it's a campy sci-fi RPG that's not quite cyberpunk, not quite steampunk. Campy... it's really hard to pin down, but it's Underspace is just a warm-up for that.
It sounds like it's right up my alley. I would play the hell out of that.
Yeah, my biggest hope for a Nanosteam someday is someone will describe it as Borderlands, but funny.
Oh, damn. Shots fired.
Shots fired.
Literally.
Jinx.
Damn. No, I love a good it's got first. Good.
It's got that similar over-the-top weapons, campy world, but a little bit better written is the goal.
Most things are.
Damn.
Whoa.
That's not unfair. I mean, we enjoyed Borderlands around here, but that is not unfair. That sounds great because I love a good like cyberpunk like 2077. Oh, I loved the hell out of that. The first person.
Yeah, I've been playing through it right now. I've been really liking it. I've been playing as a netrunner, and that's really fun.
Oh, it's so fun. Let me give you a pro tip. Try throwing knives. Cause
I got like the sword they give you, like the backer sword or whatever. That's like the Witcher sword that you get at the beginning.
Oh,
and
that
just,
one.
That one's too broken, honestly. I'm a little sad that it's so powerful because there's like no reason to use anything else as a melee character.
It evens out later on.
I don't think
I'm level
tried
60,
that.
So.
Oh, shit. Oh. I don't think I've tried that one, but.
Okay, I'll tell you, it's not just the sword. The swords are in general kind of busted in that game.
Yeah, I'm a netrunner melee character, so it's like I'm pretty broken.
Yeah, by the end of the game, I was a netrunner knife thrower, and throwing that they revamped the entire throwing knife system in that game, and it got so fun. Oh my god!
I heard.
So oh my god!
I just wanted to pass along my compliment, and that is this. And while I enjoyed the space combat, my favorite thing is the artwork in the space station, because walking around the space station always kind of makes the game feel more alive to me. And that was, that was kind of my favorite part of the game. And I just walked around the space stations for a long time and said, I guess I better go fly the spaceship for a while.
Yeah. The first planet you land on, I forget the name.
Baldric.
There's a part where I felt like I was on Caprica in the Battlestar Galactica reboot from like 2005, where she's in the doctor's office and all these ships flying around outside a giant window, and I'm like, wow, that it hit a very similar note for me. So I thought that was great.
I'm like, shut up! I want to look out the window for a while.
contemplate your life.
And there's stuff on those space stations, right? Like, it's not just jumping from the trader to the bar. Like, you can walk around
and there's extra stuff
and talk to people and find stuff as well.
Yeah, so there's way more coming to space stations outside of the starting area. We were just mainly just trying to get some of the tech and detail working, but one of the big updates will be a whole station pass through that has a bunch of extra stuff.
Oh, great.
Nice.
Oh, great. Well,
I really enjoyed that part of it, and congratulations on your first solo effort. That's great. Yeah,
this is really great. So, friends, the game is Underspace, if you haven't figured that out by now. I mean, we've been talking about it for an hour 15. It's on Steam and GOG currently. We just missed the sale, the intro sale. I think it ended yesterday as we're recording this. But it's what, $19.99? My God. There's so much content here. My God. If you guys liked Freelancer at all, definitely get this, because it scratched a lot of those same itches, but it has its own flavor and its own style. But it's definitely also a love letter to Freelancer. You can definitely tell it's got that in its DNA. Yep. Kevin, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. We'll definitely have you back once this hits 1.0. We like to kind of do multiple passes with the developer as the game progresses. So we'll definitely have you back, hopefully within a year-ish or so once you leave early access. And I can't wait for these big updates you have planned with the stations and the storms and everything.
There's stuff coming.
Because there's already so much here. You guys, this game is huge. There's so much to do. It's ridiculous. There's so much to do in this game already. Oh, my God. That's going to do it for today, folks. Next week, we're going to have a topic. We're going to talk about one-hit wonders, games that were great and then, like, no one remembers anymore. So we're going to talk about that next week on the show. And I don't remember what I'm playing tomorrow. Blood West Blood, whatever the hell that thing's called. I think that's what I'm playing. I don't remember. Anyway, folks, I need lunch so badly. Have a great day, everyone. Be safe, be well, take care of each other. Please get your vaccines and your shots if you haven't already. There's still a pandemic going on. People might try to act like it's over. It's not over. Get your shots, wear your masks, please. We got to get through this together. Thank you, as always, to our patrons who help pay for things like Restream, which is very expensive. And with that, we'll see you back here tomorrow for whatever the hell I'm streaming. Have a good one, y'all. Bye-bye. I'm